the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
Good morning, everybody. Hello. Thank you very much, Paul. My name is Simon. I'm one of the leaders here at the church. I work for a tech company, and I'm also a stay-at-home dad. And that's pretty much everything you need to know about me. Jesus summarized his life purpose saying these words. He had come to seek and to save the lost. That's what Jesus says he's all about. So it's no surprise then that we find him telling lost and found stories. He tells three of them in Luke's Gospel, chapter 15. Story one. God is portrayed as a shepherd. Sorry, Guy, could you move me along a slide? Dramatic tension. Picture of a sheep. You know where you are. Story one. God is portrayed as a shepherd, passionately searching the open country for one lost sheep. He finds it. And he carries it home on his shoulders, once lost and now found. Story two. God is portrayed as a wealthy woman, diligently searching her home for a lost coin. And after a thorough search, she finds it, once lost and now found. Now, whether it's Odysseus or whether it's Nemo, we love a lost and found story. Just think about perhaps the last time you lost your keys or you lost your wallet. Once you found them, did you tell anyone? Were you pleased? We love a lost and found story. Here's some of the recent ones that I've spotted. If you've been combing BBC News like I do, have a look at some of these. These are our lost and found stories from the last month. Paul McCartney. He's recently been reunited with his Hofner bass guitar. He lost it 51 years ago. So someone set up a Find Paul's Bass project, and it was discovered. Once lost and now found. Paul McCartney found his guitar last month. Or how about this one? I don't know whether any of you are F1 fans. This is, oh, thank you, Drew. This is Gerhard Berger's Ferrari. He's like a Formula One driver in the 90s, and he lost his Ferrari, or more like it was stolen. Thanks, Drew. It was stolen back in 95, and the Met Police recovered it last Tuesday and returned it to Gerhard Berger, once lost and now found. But probably our favourite type of lost and found story, and you know probably what this picture is going to be, a dog. Have you seen any lost dog pictures or lost cat pictures? Finding a lost pet. This is Costa the dog. She had been missing since September in the wilds of Pembrokeshire. And she was reunited with her owners last Sunday using an elaborate rescue trap and some chicken broth. We've all got a price, haven't we? Yeah. Lost and now found. We just love these lost and found stories, don't we? Perhaps we find them so compelling because, like it or not, they speak to something much deeper within us. We can sympathize, can't we, with the sadness of losing. We can empathize with the tension of searching, and we can share in the joy of finding. And Christianity, Jesus wants to tell us, is a lost and found story. Stories one and two, God portrayed as a shepherd, or God portrayed as a wealthy woman searching for a coin, they both end in the exact same way. They end with shared joy. They end with community shared joy. The shepherd finds his sheep and he invites his neighbors and his friends to come together and celebrate because what is lost has now been found. Likewise for the woman with the coin. She finds the coin and she invites her neighbors and her friends together to celebrate. What's lost has now been found. And we've been repeating that pattern this morning, haven't we? We've heard the lost and found stories of those being baptized this morning. We've called together friends and neighbors to share in this joyous celebration. And because it's a celebration, I thought we should do some giveaways. So we are about in a few moments' time to read the story of the prodigal son. You're going to get like a couple of minutes from me on it. But if you would like to read about it in depth, if what I say in a few moments' time sparks some interest, I've got a stack of 10 at these at the front. Daniel's trying to get one now at the moment. I've got a stack of 10 of these at the front, and I don't want to go home with them. So if you would like to grab one of these after the service, do come and find me. The Prodigal God by Tim Keller. It's a fantastic read for whether you're curious or already a believer. So here's the pattern of all the stories that goes lost, found, and then shared joy. Now, in a few moments' time, we're going to read the big story, the culminating lost and found story. Chances are you already know it. It's called The Prodigal Son. But before we get into it, I just wanted to pause and get us to grab something before we dive in. I've told you that Jesus has told two stories. He's told two stories already, and here's what we need to spot about them. He's told one story about a lost sheep, something lost far away, out in open country, in the distance. He's told another story about a wealthy woman who happens to have lost something in her own home, under her own nose. Something lost at home. Two stories. One lost far away, and one lost at home. Well, let's read the scriptures together. You'll find this on page 990 of your church Bibles. The scriptures are going to be on the screen as well. And let me read to you. Jesus continued. There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the estate." So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, and he set off for a distant country, and he there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he'd spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to the field to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am, starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.'" So he got up and went to his father. We're just going to pause there. This is one of the great stories of Scripture. It portrays big themes, the closest of family relationships, that often mired way in which we connect with money and property. It touches upon a rejection, dishonor, misfortune, hunger, loneliness, and shame. It portrays a vivid example of what it looks like to be lost. Verse 12, the younger son demands his share of the inheritance. Jewish culture and law demanded that the inheritance come to a son solely upon the death of an individual. In one move, the younger son has written himself a blank check of opportunity and possibility, but it comes at a cost. It's as if he's saying to his father, I wish you were dead. You're dead to me. Then in quick succession, things fall apart. Verse 13. Distant country, squandered wealth, wild living. And once everything had gone, famine. Apparently famine is the thing that we Westerners miss when we read this story. It's not his fault. It's misfortune, plain misfortune. Verse 14, and he began to be in need. He spotted and noticed his need. Do you think that's the turning point? Is that the moment of realization at which this guy might go, I'm lost? Is this a turning point, a moment of realization? No. Surprisingly, no. It's amazing how long we can hold on under our own steam. It's only the place of complete loneliness, emptiness and shame that the first glimmers of light appear, the first beginnings of grace appear for this younger son. It happens in this most unflattering of places, the pigsty. It's this beautiful, wonderful moment. The entire story, this is the hinge, and it starts in a pigsty. If you're mapping it onto your own life, think the spiritual pigsty. It happens in the most unflattering of places, but that's actually the beginning of this vast journey. Truly, it begins here. So a question for you, if you're following me so far, what would it take for you to start on the road home? What would it take for you to start out on that road home back to the Father? Verse 18. The younger son's worldly imagination, it can only stretch so far. He can only imagine getting back home as a slave, as a servant. He's in that transactional realm of worker and wages. Make me like one of your hired servants, verse 19. So he's on the road home and he's wondering what the right words are. What's the formula? What do I need to say to unlock the Father's favor? What's it going to be? I've got to get this speech right. He's practicing it on the way home. But before he has a chance to clean up his life, to evidence a change of heart, to complete his repentant speech, while he was still a long way off, he's welcomed home. Let's take a look and carry on reading from verse 20. While he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him and kissed him. The son said to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. While he was still a long way off, his father saw him, was filled with compassion, and he ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and he kissed him. This father has been longing, looking, his eyes have been scanning the distant horizon for his son, hoping beyond hope, looking for the very first glimpse of him coming over the hill. And we see him now in passion and in grace and overwhelming love, welcoming back this estranged son. To those who've been baptized this morning, wasn't that wonderful? Just look at and enjoy the love of the Father that he has for you. He's filled his beating heart, filled with love for you. It might look very different, I think, perhaps to love you may have seen or experienced in the past. I think this looks very different to perhaps the austere, harsh leaders, civic or religious, we've known in the past. This is the beating heart and the love of the Father, welcoming those who return to him. He searched for you. He's seen you far off. He's run to you and he's thrown his arms around you. He's welcomed you and he's kissed you. You're welcome back into the Father's arms. If you've known that experience this morning, or you want to, just imagine this. Just let's put ourselves in the shoes of the younger son coming home. You might want to even close your eyes. Just imagine having that weighty and beautiful robe carefully put on your shoulders. That's favor and approval, esteem. Imagine having that solid signet ring placed on your finger. That's belonging, identity, restoration to the family name. Imagine having the sandals placed on your feet. That's receiving care, service, dignity. He is at your feet, serving you. And then just imagine the celebration. Rightly, we've clapped, cheered, and whooped this morning, haven't we? That's just a small earthly glimmer of the heavenly celebration that's gone on when anyone turns to the Father's open arms. And sometimes it's only from the vantage point of being found that we can truly appreciate the whole story. You don't know how lost you are until you're found. Well, the Father bears this pain and loss of those who've turned away from him, yet he holds a deeper still affection for his son off in the far country. His heart continues to passionately beat all that time whilst he's away, and he gladly welcomes him home. But this is a story about two sons, and there's one more to go. Let's take a read together from verse 25. There's an older son. This isn't just a story about a prodigal. There is an older son. Meanwhile, the elder son was in the field, and when he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him, "What's going on?" "Your brother has come," he replied, "and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound." The elder brother became angry and he refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, "Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and have never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him." "My son," the father said, "you're always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad, because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again, was lost and is found." The older son is provoked to anger by the gracious and extravagant reception that the younger son receives. He's clearly a hard worker, verse 25. He's been out in the fields working whilst everybody else is partying. Nothing wrong with hard, diligent work. If you read the book of Proverbs, you would know that straight and clear. The problem comes when we take our transactional world of hard work and wages and we try to map it onto the heavens. When we try to map it onto the heavenly attributes of grace and mercy and forgiveness, the math never adds up. There is a lavish and spendthrift nature to the grace of God, and God will have it no other way. It is why Tim Keller wanted to write this book, not called The Prodigal Son, but The Prodigal God. Prodigal means spendthrift, reckless. It is God's grace that is the reckless one. And it's that that seems to make the older son incredibly angry. His problem is this deeply held assumption that he's deserving of and entitled to the father's love. And more importantly, he seems to know who isn't. And it's here we get an insight to what it looks like to be lost at home, under your very nose. He's in the right place, the father's house, but for all the wrong reasons. One's lostness, then, isn't simply about how far you are from home, but whether you've grasped the beating heart of the love of God. And honestly, this is my issue. I may have a story that starts out in the world of the prodigal, but day to day, I find myself far closer to the older son. It is easy, bit by bit, especially when you're all in and you want to work hard for the Lord, to go down this older brother route. But I want us to be careful in the way we apply this. It's clear that Jesus is telling a story to two very different groups of people. He has in front of him sinners and tax collectors, Pharisees and teachers of the law. That's his audience for this lost and found story. The sinners and the tax collectors, they align with the younger son, don't they? The Pharisees and the teachers of the law, they align with the older son. But what we're doing is we're not to just throw ourselves into either camp and just write off those who are in church week in, week out, reading the scriptures, reminding ourselves of God's grace, here in worship. We're not simply to align ourselves with the older son. That is not what Jesus is doing here. We're to see that the beating heart of the Father is for both the broken and the humble, but it is also for the self-righteous and the proud. That's how lavish his grace is. Did you see what the father does when the son gets angry? He's straight out there. He's out pleading with his son to come back into the party. Come and join the party. Come and share in the joy. There's no reason to look so glum. It's a happy place to be. So as we try and apply this now, let's do it smartly and intelligently. And so as I close here, I just want to talk briefly to those who haven't gone off the rails. If you read the prodigal story and you think, yeah, great, but I've known the Lord almost all my life and I've not gone off the rails, allow me to speak to you. I think you're addressed in this parable. You may not have a rags-to-riches story. Oh, thank God that you don't, that there hasn't been the pigsty for you. Perhaps you've been raised in church. Perhaps you've been walking with Jesus for some time, quietly growing in grace as he would have you. You're in this story too, and I want to show you where. Imagine you've been walking with Jesus for some time, perhaps ever since you were young. Perhaps you're a church kid and you've grown up in this place, experiencing that steady and quiet growth in trust and faith in Jesus. The Father's heart is beating for you too, just as strongly, just as powerfully. You are no afterthought. It isn't all about the prodigal. Everything is for you. My son, the Father said, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. You may not have renounced your faith and gone off the rails. Perhaps you think, when it comes to you, he never ran to meet me. Well, let verse 31 be yours. My son, the Father said, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. So don't despair. The God who rejoices over the return of the prodigal is the God who rejoices over you. There is great joy in heaven over all who come back to God, whether from near or from far. You are always with me, and everything I have is yours. I take it that includes being sought and searched for, being embraced and kissed, the robe, the ring, the sandals, the celebration, it's all yours. You are always with me, and everything I have is yours.